It is 8:34 in the morning. You're listening to Upfront. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiekert.
And I'm Kat Brooks. And last night at the Oakland City Council meeting, a big win for those in the fight for Oakland rent control. The City Council voted 6-0 to approve removing exemptions for rent hikes for duplexes and triplexes in the city of Oakland. I am joined this morning in studio by Leah Simon-Weisberg, the directing attorney for Centro Legal de la Raza. Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Tired and but very excited. It's been a long campaign. The tenant advocates have been working on this, and tenants, for almost 4 years.
So talk about what the legislation, I mean, it's in effect right now.
Right now.
Right? It went into effect immediately because it got 6 votes. So what does the legislation do?
What it does is essentially take the targets off the backs of tenants who live in duplexes and triplexes. And it also creates a situation where all tenants in Oakland have the same protections. One of the struggles in terms of protecting folks and stopping displacement is that so many of the protections in Oakland had lots of exceptions. It's like you're protected except. And so I think that this is one of the kind of the last pieces that's going to make a big difference. And the reason it was so important is that essentially, you know, speculation is what is driving the displacement in all of the communities in Oakland. Because we don't regulate our housing, particularly the housing costs, a lot of folks spend a lot of time finding ways to make money off of the protections we do have. And what was happening, particularly up until about two years ago, is that you could claim you were doing an owner move-in. And then once you pretended to move in, you were able to evict all of the tenants in a duplex and triplex. And there were just no protections. You didn't have to pay relocation. And then tenants would have protections for 2 years, but they wouldn't have just cause. So we got relocation when you do an owner move-in. So all of the owner move-in kind of fake notices really stopped. I've practiced all over California. And when I started working in Oakland about 2 years ago, every tenant who came in had an owner move-in. I would see 10 a year in other cities. And here it was a daily thing. And that was kind of one of the many pieces to get to the point of having a triplex, long-term tenants, and basically evicting them and being able to sell that you could then raise it to market. I don't know if that makes sense in a way.
Sure.
That it,
you higher know. Sales price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, Leah Simon-Weisberg, we weren't planning to do this, but since you're a tenants' rights attorney, I'm guessing there are a lot of people in Oakland in precarious housing situations who might have questions about how they'll be impacted. Would you be willing to take a few listener calls if people have questions?
Absolutely.
Folks, if you're in Oakland, particularly if you're in a duplex or triplex and you want to know how this new law is going to impact your situation, we'd love to hear from you. 510-848-4425 is our call in line. 510-848-4425. First off, when's this going to take effect?
It already did.
It took effect last night.
So if someone's in the midst of eviction proceedings, they suddenly find themselves armed with new rights if they're in a duplex or triplex in Oakland?
Yes. And one thing, though, we already, in the last election, Oakland voters voted to provide those same tenants with just cause for the first time. So we've already had that just cause protection. So people who are facing eviction can only be evicted for cause already. What this was saying is you cannot get people out by just doubling their and tripling their rent. So we've had hundreds of tenants where the landlords, even though there was just cause, would double, triple their rent. And so that's what really changed. So any rent increase that went into that landlords were trying to get from tenants that were above the CPI, which means the consumer price index, which essentially is inflation, and it's 3.4% increase right now for this year in Oakland. All of those rents, they're just illegal, can't do it, and going forward.
So let's talk, because there was some attempts. Some folks sitting in the chambers last night thought that there was some attempts by some people on the dais to confuse the issue about for landlords who raised their rents last year. And so what does this legislation say about, or how does it, if it does at all, impact, let's say I'm a landlord and I, in December of 2018, I raised the rent for my tenant. Is that raise still good?
So it depends what the raise was. And I think that, because just cause went into effect, you know, at the last election in November, one of the concerns that we all had was that folks were going to have just cause protections, but simply by raising the rent by $1,000, the landlord would get, you know, the eviction that they couldn't have just by raising the rent, right? And so what we did is we did a rollback that all base rents, and this is the part about rent control that when you start explaining it, people, it all gets foggy. But what rent control is about is saying, and the kind that we have in California, is that the landlord gets to decide your original rent, like the first moment. What we call that is the base rent, where you start. And then the landlord's the only one who gets to control that. What then cities can control is where, how it moves going forward. So what we're talking about is what we've deemed for these units that have never been controlled, right? That the city never could say how, what the increases could be. They're deeming the base rent to have been what it was in October, essentially this, or excuse me, in November.
Of 2018.
Right. So essentially when those tenants got just cause, they also got rent control to the extent that that's what the rent is then. So if you are a tenant and you want to know what, and my landlord wants to do an inflation increase, right? So 3.4%. You add the 3.4%, whatever your rent was in November 2018. And this is how we always implement rent control in California. So when you first start, because, and we learned this in Richmond, because we remember we hadn't had any new rent control ordinances for almost 30 years. And so when you're going to implement it for the first time, and for these units, you have to decide, well, where are we starting? Where is the calculation? Is it what they were paying 15 years ago or what? So you usually say a date, and it's usually rolled back to whenever the legislation, we started talking about it, because often there'll be a rush to raise rents.
Want to be clear, like if I'm in a duplex in Oakland and my landlord gave me a $600 a month rent hike in March, that's gone now.
That's gone.
It's back to last November's rent plus 3.whatever%.
Yes, if the landlord serves you a notice for that 3.4%.
Wow. We are getting questions from callers. So I want to invite Natasha in Oakland onto the air. Good morning.
Good morning to you all. Thank you for your hard work. I really appreciate it, as I'm sure other people do. Good morning. I was wondering, you know, I'm in, I've gone through an unlawful detainer. I've been in a home for 16 years. And with the speculation, you know, that's happened, things are just messy in the court and we're not able to get help, you know, in a quick enough fashion, you know. And I know that like the places that are there to help, you know, are completely, you know, overlogged or, you know, booked up. And it's really hard to get some help. And it's really hard to, so I'm wondering if maybe you can help me. At this point, I'm in my house right now, even though the sheriff has already come. My daughter's going to claim a right to possession. However, it's been hellacious for the past 4 years with people trying to just get the property.
Natasha, what's your specific question for Leah in terms of what you need help with?
My specific question is, where do we get those protections? How do we assert our rights, you know, because I'm having a hard time in the courts?
Well,
how do we find the help?
Right. Well, I think one thing you can do is if you're living in Oakland is to go down to the rent program and they have counseling. And that's where that's often probably the best step. If you are already in the court system, then you want to reach out to one of the tenant rights programs. You know, there's one at Centro, EBCLC, Eviction Defense Center. And all of us have received additional funding that the city has invested. Now, obviously, we need way more funding, we're hoping that we've increased some capacity, but that's what you want to do.
Natasha, you're not working with an attorney currently?
I've had such a hard time finding one at such short notice, and I've gone to different programs. I know you guys are doing excellent work, and I'm going to come down there you have clinics, right, that are open to the public, right?
Yes.
I'm going to come see you because I really appreciate the work that you've done, and I know that I can find some help to you.
All right. Thanks for your call, Natasha.
But thank you very much. Appreciate you. Bye-bye. Have a great day.
And if you have questions about how you're impacted by Oakland's new move to close its rent hole exemptions for duplexes and triplexes, you got about 15 minutes to get that call into a tenant's rights attorney who knows the law inside and out, 510-848-4425.
Leah, I want to... So one of the things that struck me about last night was several advocates, when they took the mic, talked about, yes, we do also need to protect mom and pop landlords, because that, and that's sort of who the opposition trotted out, right, was folks that maybe, that particularly folks that lived in their duplex, you know, and they espoused all this fear about if they can't charge what they need to charge, they're going to go bankrupt, you know, they're going to lose their homes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I want to get into what is and what is not true about that. But what does that look like? Is there a danger for mom and pop landlords with this new legislation? What are people saying we need to protect them from, and what resources exist at the city for them if they need help?
Yeah. So I think that if, first off, all of the landlords who presently own those properties and have tenants got to decide what those rents were when those tenants moved in. And they have the ability, if they're not getting a fair return on their investment, can file a petition. So that protects them from any kind of situations where, you know, the classic story is you've got, you know, every single tenant you have has been there for 25 years and you just purchased the property, and that there's all of these repairs that need to be made, and you as the new landlord need to make those repairs, and you cannot do it on those rents. And that the prior person, and it's often an inherited property. Now, I have actually never seen that scenario, but this is the like worst case scenario where you really can't afford it. You can go to the rent board and you can file a petition to increase it to show I need to make, well, you can't do it before you've done the repairs. But if you can say, look, I'm not even getting a dollar after I pay for the utilities and I, you know, whatever basic costs they have. But what if landlords need to fix the roof, they can fix the roof and then they can file what's called a capital improvements petition. And they will be able to increase the rent by a certain percentage over, you know, the life of that, you know, kind of major repair. Now, basic things of like, you know, the plumbing, you know, gets blocked up or something. And, you know, you can't pass on every $5 thing, but you can. I mean, they get tax deductions for those things. So is the so there's, until we have vacancy control where the government gets to choose the first rent and the ongoing rents, then maybe we can worry about that. But right now, you know, the average tenant only lives somewhere 2 to 3 years. So on average, every landlord has people who've only been there a few years, so their rents are at market. And they will have, in a few situations, long-term tenants. I think that what the real issue is, the realtors have been selling this product called buy a duplex or triplex for not as much money because the tenants are paying low amounts, and then you will automatically get to make this profit by evicting them or after 2 years being able to raise the rent. That's how it worked. And so that pushes up the price of those duplexes and triplexes. And in early on, we would have testimony from people who had bought a duplex and triplex for a ridiculous amount of money with the being told by their realtors that they would be able to basically pay these incredible mortgages by having, you know, these tech workers or this fantasy people who can afford all of these things, that they, that somehow their tenants would be paying $4,000 a month for a two-bedroom. And yet there were, you know, and there were folks there last night who had lived there for 20 years, who were, you know, elderly, and they were paying $1,200 in rent. And the, but the, you know, these folks had bought their property with the fantasy they're going to be able to kick them out and have somebody else basically pay their mortgage. And this is one of the many ways that the realtors have found ways to keep pushing the price of housing. And remember, the only part of our economy that is benefiting from the housing crisis are the realtors, because they make a percentage of the sale price, right? Even landlords don't, because they can, you know, if you buy at $100,000, and you sell at $120,000, or if, you know, whatever that profit is for a landlord is not going to matter that much, no matter what the price is, because it's only that differential. But a realtor gets 5% or 6% of the sale price, right? So they're constantly looking for ways to create situations where more and more people can pay these crazy amounts. The other thing is, a lot of realtors are also management companies, that they play both roles. That's the other part of this economy where folks are benefiting from high rents because they get a percentage of the rent price.
So the landlord, the owner, might technically be a small-time business person, a mom and pop who owns the title to the building. But the person you as a tenant deal with is a management company operating out of a realtor's office who, for all intents and purposes, operates like a big landlord.
Right.
They have hundreds of tenants they're working with. They've got attorneys on retainer.
Right. And they'd rather your rent be $4,000 than $1,200.
Right. Which it can be if, like, so let's say there is a vacancy. Landlords can set it at $4,000.
Right. And that's one of the reasons that there's such an incentive to evict tenants because this is one of the reasons people are asking to reform Costa-Hawkins, is that the reason, you know, speculators and people who own property who want to get long-term tenants out is that while they have the right to be there $1,200 or, you know, $1,500, the day they get evicted voluntarily, meaning for cause, or if they just leave or they pass away, then the landlord has the right to raise it to whatever they want. They talk about that this equity that they're capturing, this profit that is sitting, you know, inactive, and so they're actually consciously seeking that out and recognize that as kind of a part of their business model.
How many duplexes and triplexes in Oakland total? Like what portion of the rental housing stock is impacted by this change?
It's approximately 8,000. You know, unfortunately, Oakland doesn't have a rent registry. They don't have like here in Berkeley where they know exactly, mm-hmm. You know, what the housing stock looks like. But it impacts a lot of folks because it wasn't an exemption that was transitory, right? So it's if the owner was there or not. So how many landlords are actually benefiting from this exemption was always changed day to day because, you know, people moved in and out. But it has the capacity about 8,000. I think also one thing that's really important is that not every single district in the city is impacted equally. But one of the things I think was very telling and very concerning last night is that District 3 has the highest percentage of these units and was the epicenter of this abuse. And yet, you know, the leadership from that district thought it was more important to protect phantom landlords. I mean,
that's exactly where I wanted to go next. So I'm glad that we made that segue. So Councilmember Lynette McElhaney was very vocally opposed to this legislation. She sent out an email to her base. I'm a D3 resident. She sent out an email to her base urging landlords to come forth, saying their voices had not been heard, and ultimately said that this legislation would hurt both tenants and landlords, and sort of under this guise of that she's protecting Black people and the Black middle class, and that this was going to particularly harm Black people, which you saw other Black organizers that are traditionally on our side on issues, right, sort of lining up with that. Any truth to any of that?
This, for somebody who is owning a property in any traditional way that the middle class has benefited, you know, I mean, it has been a classic thing that immigrants, when they come to the United States, will purchase a triplex or duplex. This is part of the kind of crawling up the way that Americans have this particular perspective on it. But because the way rent control works, your normal real estate investment is always protected. And remember, real estate investment is supposed to be a long-term investment. It is speculation, this concept of buying and kicking out a tenant and immediately making money off of that and flipping it. That is incredibly dangerous. And in many countries, it's illegal. And, you know, many places are looking at that there should be a huge or very large tax on properties that have been flipped because you're doing that. You're creating poverty and to make that. It's kind of, you know, it's similar to wages. It's like, yes, if you pay everybody nothing, you will make more. But what are the costs on the society?
The chambers were expecting Councilmember McElhaney to be a no vote. But she voted yes, making it 6-0 with Reed excused and Lauren Taylor, because he owns a duplex.
Correct.
Being recused. you don't have a crystal ball, but from your perspective, why do you think that ultimately council member voted along with the rest of the council?
To hide her incredible hostility to tenants. She likes to, she always votes with the majority when we have been passing these tenant protections so that nobody can say that she has a record of voting against tenants. But clearly, every action, everything she said was, you know, trying to undermine this. I mean, she spent enormous office resources to try and motivate landlords to come out and speak out against it. Every newsletter, I mean, she, you know, she must have had staff working on this because, you know, landlords talked about having gotten postcards. I mean, it is pretty shocking to me that considering we have the worst housing crisis, that Oakland is one of the epicenters, and within that, it is her district that is the epicenter, and she has done nothing to address the 80% of her district are tenants. And in fact, the two families that really started this kind of this round of this legislation was two families from her district. And she never did anything for them. She never even acknowledged them or tried to figure it out or offered to do anything. And one of those families, you know, is a three-generation Black family where the grandmother, daughter, and grandchildren all lived in the same triplex. And they've all been displaced.
We're speaking to Leah Simon-Weisberg. She is the managing attorney for tenants' rights at Centro Legal de la Raza, one of the advocates behind Oakland City Council's unanimous vote last night on second reading to remove the exemption that keeps duplexes and triplexes out of the city's rent control ordinance. Leah, we've got one more listener call I want to squeeze in before we sign off for the hour. Norma's on the air with us from Oakland. Good morning, Norma. What's your question?
Good morning. I am a duplex occupied owner, and I wish you would have, and I'm also Black, I wish you would have some property owners on your show so that you could get the other side of the story.
Well, we've got you, but you've only got about a minute. Go for it.
Well, I'm going to say I'm hearing a lot of inaccuracies. The number of 8,000, for example, the number of 8,000 units, that's incorrect. And also, I did receive an inquiry, a survey, just asking us to provide information to Councilwoman McElhaney, for example. But anyway, the point is, I wish you would tell the other side of the story, because I'm hearing a lot of inaccuracies.
Norma, what are you specifically saying is inaccurate?
I can't tell you everything that I've heard this morning, but I do know I am active with rental property owners, and there is a group that is gathering data and has been presenting data. And as I said, I wasn't prepared to be on your panel this morning, but I wish you would bring in a panel of rental property owners who represent the people that your guest is currently saying a lot of things.
Well,
that
we'll tell you what, Norma, we're out of time. You want to get in touch with us, you can email upfront@kpfa.org. We pride ourselves in having our facts straight, so if you find something we put on the air that was not right, we will make an on-air correction. That's upfront@kpfa.org, and appreciate the call.
And thank you, Norma. I mean, I do want to say representatives from that group says that they're collecting data, and I'm doing air quotes, did present last night, and were a lot of inaccuracies, so which was part of the problem, is that someone has a vested interest in spreading misinformation about what is happening in our city.
Leah Simon-Weisberg, thank you so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you so much.
Leah Simon-Weisberg is managing attorney for tenants' rights with Centro Legal de la Raza, and that does it for Upfront this morning. We're here weekday mornings from 7 to 9 a.m. If you want to get in touch, that email address again is upfront@kpfa.org.